E.S. Browning wrote in the Wall Street Journal, "Stocks are defying the critics." In there, he says, even some bears now acknowledge that when they warned people to stay away from stocks 1 year ago, they were wrong. But they insist that now, after the market's big gains, it is too late to buy. That wasn't written just this past weekend, though. That was written on October 13th, 2003. And since then, the S&P 500 has an annualized gain of 11%. Mad. Money Machine, Show 70. Second week of July. Hello, everyone. Thank you for downloading the Mad Money Machine. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the show. Could this be the only business podcast that doesn't have something of its own to sell? No books, no newspapers, no magazines, no TV shows, no services, I ask you. Yeah, if you think about it, just about every other business podcast has something of their own that they're trying to sell. Now, me, the only thing I have to sell is advertising space, and I have a wonderful sponsor at IFA.com, but there's nothing of my own. I'm not an investment advisor. I don't have a book of my own to sell, although I'm going to be giving away a book called Index Funds, a 12-Step Program for Active Investors on this show. The Mad Money Machine, your only source of unbiased information. Oh, hyperbole. First, a little something that came across the Google Alerts line this past week. Article from some magazine entitled, "Dictionary's New Words Are Larger Than Life." Each year, Merriam-Webster Dictionary adds new words they deem to have become part of the language. They just announced the latest crop, and though some of the choices feel random, the list always seems to say something about life today. And it talks about ginormous and IED. And then it says, TV wrestling has had a big enough impact that SmackDown is now a real word. It's mostly used to describe Friday night death matches between people named Edge, Deuce, and Domino. Admittedly, it has gone beyond wrestling. And it is even used in areas of high finance by people like stock analyst Jim Cramer, who has begun featuring a contest called the Mad Money Machine Board of Directors Portfolio Smackdown. Well, so sometimes your fact-checking isn't always accurate, is it? Yeah, they had no link to the MadMoneyMachine.com website and, of course, didn't realize that it's not Jim Cramer, it's Paul Douglas Boyer. But other words include snowboard cross, a new sport where half a dozen boarders barrel down the mountain like a scene out of Ben-Hur. Going fast isn't enough to hold an audience. There has to be a prospect of major collisions. Speed dating, perfect storm, and last year's words were spyware, ringtone, biodiesel, and gastric bypass. And speaking of gastric bypass, I've told you that I've taken up running and also trying to eat right and lose a little bit of weight, get back to, I guess, what the BMI specialists would call my normal weight. And so it's important to have friends and family support you, isn't it, when you're trying to lose weight? Which is why I guess I found it a bit disconcerting when my wife suggested that we take a tour of a nearby potato chip factory. Recently, we went to Route 11 Potato Chips near Winchester, Virginia, a small family-owned business where you can look through a window and watch them make potato chips. And naturally, that's not good enough. When you visit a potato chip factory, you have to take home an enormous box full of their samplers of potato chips. Potato chips being just about my favorite food. So we are almost finished with those. I'm not sure what tour she'll sign us up for next. So do you remember when you paid cash for gasoline. It's getting harder and harder to pay cash these days. We do have a gas station near us called Lowest Price Gas. I'm sure it's an independently run gas station. And they only accept cash. Now, I've been usually going to our Costco to buy gas on the credit card. You slide the thing in and you pump it until it clicks and you're done. But when you pay cash, you usually try to round it off to the nearest dollar. Now, when gas was 50 cents a gallon, 53 cents a gallon, let's call it, it was pretty easy to hit the $10 figure, I guess, on your on the gas pump. But with gas over $3 a gallon, that last penny's digit spins around so quickly, you can't always land exactly on the dollar. You've got to use this very fine hand motion on this little trigger thing. And when I went to Lowest Price Gas and tried to put in $50 exactly, I got it, you know, $49.97, $49.98, $49.99, $50.01! So what do? Do you go in and, I mean, I didn't have a penny with me. So do you go in and give them three 20s and they give you $19.99 back in change? You go fishing under the seats to find a penny? Or do you try to round it up to $51? Doing this podcast, I have much more appreciation for artists. Specifically, I'm thinking of musicians. You know, you wonder about some of the great songs that have been made in the past. I'm thinking Paul McCartney and some of the great Wings songs that he has, some of the great hits. But he's had albums out more recently, and as far as I know, none of the songs are hits. What's going on? Is it the long tail effect, where there's so many artists now we can't pay attention to any particular one artist? Is it the songs truly aren't any good anymore? Do the artists not really spend time crafting their masterpiece anymore? Are they just beholden to their contracts to crank out another song? Like a podcaster wants to crank out another show per week? I have an appreciation now for artists. Got a thing in the mail this week from the IRS saying I owe a penalty on failure to prepay my taxes from last year. Yeah, when I sold a stock and took a capital gain on it, I should have sent my taxes in right away, apparently, instead of waiting until the following April 17th to pay the taxes. And I thought, well, it's not going to be too big of a deal, right? 3-4% interest. No, it turns out it's 7-8% interest. Well, that's a pretty good deal, government. You pay out, what, 5%? But you take in 7-8%.
Sing a song of taxes. Working class cancer sore. He in Boston Harbor. Revolutionary war. Of giving to the rich. And taking from the poor. Sing a song of taxes. Let's even up the score. Sing a song of taxes in the present.
Got an email from Bob this past week. Says, Paul, I've listened to a few of your podcasts and some random older ones and find it kind of ironic. You, although less frequently now than in previous podcasts, bash Kramer for spending time doing homework, yet you yourself do a lot doing the website and podcast. Ironic. Maybe that can be your show title someday, smiley face. Think of how much more time you'd have if you didn't have the site or podcast. Maybe you're more like Kramer than you would want to admit. He has a passion and love of investing, and maybe you do too. You find investing interesting. Just like Kramer. And then Bob goes on to say, for the vast majority of my money, I'm a lazy portfolio investor. Vanguard, 7 index funds. But also have about $12,000 in an IRA at a discount broker that I can play around with in stocks. I'll retire on my lazy portfolio money, but I'll have fun and learn and keep interested in investing with my mad money at the discount broker. Okay, I think that's exactly what mad money is all about. And then Bob asks, how many listeners to your podcasts do you have? Have fun, Bob, Santa Clarita, California. Well, you know, Figuring out how many listeners I have is not an exact science. The number of downloads per show, even, is hard to track because Libsyn has this thing called a Libsyn estimated audience. And they try to track unique IP addresses, although they admit that sometimes, say if a number of people are listening through a specific company internet, there may be quite a number of people listening from the same IP address. So it is an estimate of the audience. And I can tell you it is in the low thousands. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I really do not have a good handle on the number. And should I really even care? I am having fun, Bob. Thank you very much. Well, to your first question about doing the homework, isn't it ironic that I do homework to do this show and I advocate that we shouldn't do homework in picking stocks? And so, faithful listeners of Mad Money Machine, how do you think I'm going to answer Bob at this point? Do you think I'm going to get defensive and say, no, it's not homework that I'm doing? Or would you think that I'm going to answer in a way that says, yes, I am the one doing the homework for all of you. So one person does the homework for several thousands of people, hopefully, that don't have to do homework. Or am I going to come at it from the angle of, well, stock picking is not the right thing to do anyway, and therefore doing homework trying to pick stocks is a completely futile endeavor? Or do you think I'm just going to agree with Bob and say, yeah, you know what? I do a lot of homework on this site and podcast, and maybe I should quit doing this and go off and play golf and video games. But if I enjoy doing the podcast, then is it really homework? More like home fun. It's a good question, Bob. Thanks for bringing it up. I love critical feedback, and I welcome anyone to call me or write me with your critical feedback of the show. Areas of concern, areas for improvement. The Unexamined Podcast is not worth listening to. And congratulations, Bob, on being mostly a lazy portfolio investor. It's a shame the other $12K in your IRA is subject to losing to the market in the long run. And speaking of calling with feedback, I have been neglecting some of your calls on the Skype Mad Bun Machine voicemail line, 206-734-4763.
Hey, Paulie, it's Nevada from Down Under. I got a question for you about the myth that stocks actually go up as time goes by. I'm wondering what the effect of inflation has on those gains and how much of those gains are due to the fact that our dollar is actually losing purchasing power as we go along. So I was also looking at a spreadsheet to see if I could work out what effect that would have over the long term. So if you can find anything that helps us calculate the actual buying power of the dollar when we actually sell that investment at retirement, that would be great, something in Excel. All right, buddy, a big bonza to ya. Talk to you later.
Thanks for that question, Nevada. And let me read a comment in the show notes from Yo Mama 2000. Hi, Paul. Thanks for a great show. I have something disturbing to share. Last week, I was idly flipping channels, and I saw a financial program on CNBC with several investment gurus giving advice. The moderator called on one guru for his advice, and he advocated index funds as the best approach. He then elaborated on the amazing returns that indexing has produced in the past number of years. When the moderator called upon a second guru, he sneered in response to the remarks the first guru had made. It was a true sneer. And that is what fascinated me and made me stop flipping channels for a minute. This guy then went on to say that, sure, the S&P 500 is doing well now, but if you had invested in that same index from 1906 to 1940, your investment return would have remained flat for the whole time period. I don't know what program that was or even who was doing the talking, but I do remember those dates, 1906 to 1940, clearly. Is guru number two correct about the returns in those years? Yikes! Say it's not so! Yo Mama 2000. Thank you, Yo Mama. Thank you, Nevada. Let's go open the tool crib. Well, I've got one tool that's going to answer both of your questions this time. It is the S&P 500 at your fingertips. And it's a very simple blog entry by somebody out at politicalcalculations.blogspot.com. It says countless hours have been spent by stock market investors researching the historic performance of the S&P 500 stock market index. But until now, they've had to slog through spreadsheets or go data mine other reams of data to be able to extract the data they're after. And that's before doing any number crunching. Now, however, everything has changed because we here at Political Calculations are putting the entire encapsulated history of the S&P 500 at your fingertips. We've taken the raw data from the sources linked to above and made it easily accessible by selecting a month and year in our tool below. The tool will provide the average index value of the S&P 500 for the given month and year, the associated dividends and earnings for that month and year, not to mention the dividend yield and the price-to-earnings ratio. For good measure, we threw in the value of the consumer price index as well. But wait, that's not all. We did this all for a second date that you might select as well. And then we really get busy. Our tool will find the annualized rate of return for an investment made in the S&P 500 between the two dates you select, both with and without considering the reinvestment of the dividends in the index. And wait, there's even more. For no extra charge, we'll also factor in inflation into the calculations and find the rate of inflation between the two dates you select, not to mention the inflation-adjusted rates of return for an investment made in the S&P 500 between the two dates as well. Well, this is an interesting tool. And so what I've done there is I think I've answered three questions in one. The first question is not really a question. It's a thing I talked about at the very beginning of the show, the quote about the bears and how they warned people to stay away from the stock market's big gains back in October of 2003. Well, in this tool, I put in the beginning date of October 2003 and the ending date of May 2007, and it calculates for me that the return on the S&P 500 is 11% since then. With full dividends reinvested, it's almost 13%, though. So let's answer Yo Mama 2000's question. Let's go back and enter in a beginning date of 1906 in January and an ending date of 1940 in December and click calculate. And sure enough, the index rate of return for that entire 34 years is 0.19%, effectively zero return on your investment for 34 years. But wait a minute. Wait just a second. The line below that calculates the index rate of return with full dividend reinvestment. Which turns out to be almost 6% on the S&P 500 for those 34 years. And those 34 years, by the way, covered what? Two world wars and the Great Depression. So 6% on the S&P 500 in that time frame. So whoever that sneer, whoever the guru was that gave that sneer on that show, was using statistics to their advantage, perhaps, and not reporting the full story. Perhaps they were a bit biased. Perhaps they were selling something of their own. And Nevada, for you, this tool reports the rate of return on your investment, including inflation then. So let's go back and invest in the stock market from what? I don't know. let's say 2000, beginning of 2000 until recently, the most recent date, S&P 500. Well, that's an interesting calculation. The index rate of return with full dividend reinvestment of the S&P 500 since the beginning of 2000 until the end of May recently is 2.39%. And the inflation rate, however, was 2.89%. Your index rate of return with full dividend reinvestment on that time period, S&P 500, is 0.50%. And you can data mine till the cows come home. It just reinforces the notion in me that I don't want to be invested in just one segment of the world's market. I'd like to own the entire world's equity markets. That's our tool in the crib, the S&P 500 at your fingertips. And just like every tool I've given you so far, this one is free. And speaking of the S&P 500, the book Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors, has a number of charts that look at the S&P 500 returns. In Chapter 4, Time Pickers, figures 4.3 through 4.10 show the distribution of daily returns of the S&P 500 index from 2004 back to 1997. The red days equal losses and the orange days equal gains. Now, I have a link to this where you can find it at IFA.com website. Or if you look in the book on pages starting at page 80, you can see these histograms then are evenly distributed, which is to be expected from a random distribution. This display of a central distribution around the average is indicative of the randomness of the news that generates the random and unpredictable movements of the S&P 500 or any other index. Based on these histograms, investors can see how difficult it is to find the randomly distributed days with gains or to avoid the days with losses. For each period, the large gains or major losses for the entire period are highly concentrated at the right and left tails, making it impossible to consistently identify them in advance. In other words, it's impossible for time pickers to consistently outperform the market. And there's another chart, figure 4-13, that looks at the distribution of five dice being rolled. The characteristics of that average and standard deviation of a five dice roll are not exactly the same as the S&P 500, but the concept of a central distribution around the mean is similar. Whether you're looking at daily returns, monthly returns, or a thousand rolls of five dice, the distributions all look like bell-shaped curves generated by random events. And I am, of course, in the middle of reading Nassim Nicholas Taleb's The Black Swan, which basically says, don't believe these bell curves, believe the outliers. And I'll have more to say about The Black Swan in an upcoming show. But take a look at the Index Funds book. Take a look at these graphs of the histograms of daily returns of the S&P 500 for various years. Really helps to reinforce that you can't time the market. Let's listen to some other callers at the Mad Money Machine voicemail line, 206-734-4763.
Hey, Paul, this is Nick, guy who wrote you the question on the magic formula investing. Just got a chance to listen to the show. Thought it was pretty good. fun to hear about those picks in 2005, seeing how they did with that index folio. You know, looking at the data that Joel's presented in his book over the past 20 years or so, it just seemed hard to believe that, you know, a formula like that could ever beat the market by such a significant percentage. It almost seemed like, you know, some sort of data was being manipulated or something. So, I don't know, I had my suspicions about that. In fact, I tried that formula for a little bit and it didn't work so well for me. Wasn't so bad either, I guess, but probably would have been a lot better off going with index fund. So, appreciate the show and all the insights you give. So, keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Kramer, booyah from Gonzales, Louisiana. What about Bank of America?
Booyah, Jim. Tell me about Frontline, FRO. Thank you.
Yeah. How do you feel about Time Warner Cable?
Yeah, I wanted to, this is Glenn Miller from Cleveland, Ohio. And I wanted to ask Jim Cramer about a stock called SLT. It's a stock in India that's a copper and nickel mine.
If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Hey, this is Jason from Muscatine, Iowa. Muscatine like muskmelon. Just want to tell you first, I actually had a similar problem with a microphone that I was using where the only thing that told you what side you're on was hidden. Assuming you're married, I haven't looked, I honestly don't know, or if you're not, go to the store and get some deep red nail polish, get just a teeny tiny dot on the brush, and make a little dot on a spot that you can see on that microphone. Let it dry for 5 minutes, and if you can see the red dot, you know you're live. Actually, have a more ulterior motive for calling. Also, I'm in a municipality. We have, I don't remember the number, it's just like a 401k at work, have a very, very limited choice as to what I can choose. What's the best way to match up what choices I have, looking at stock history, prices, beta, whatever, with what I would like to have had I access to IFA through this thing, had I an actual choice. Just wondered, you're doing a great job with the show. And just me, I'd prefer if you change, you don't change the title. If you already have a well, that boat sailed. But for me, I think it's kind of important that you've had this whole journey. Don't ever forget about it. You're taking a lot of us along with you. You're doing good work. And I'll keep listening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hi, Paul. This is Greg Farber, one of your listeners. And I have not been listening to you lately, but I assume your shows are doing well. I have a lead for you. I was researching the health savings account, the HSA, which is an IRA-like program, and it seems to be really difficult to get a good place to invest your HSA funds. And I came across a super, super nice guy who really, boy, what a great guy. The president of the company came on and talked to me, and his group is called HSA Administrators, or actually, that's his website, is hsaadministrators.com, one word, hsaadministrators.com, and his name is John Velines, V as in Victor, Ellines, and basically, they let you invest in about 20 Vanguard funds. And I found that their fees are very reasonable. They have a setup fee of $20. They have an administration fee annually of $39. And quarterly, they charge account maintenance fees of 0.0009 times your mutual fund account balance per quarter. And there are 20 Vanguard funds that you invest in, and you're kind of like a sub-account of their main account. So you can get into Vanguard Admiral shares if you want through them. So I do recommend that you give them, take a look at their website. I think it would be some great information for you to share with your audience. If you need to contact me, I can probably be reached most easily on the cell phone.
And a big thank you to everyone who called with various questions on the Mad Money Machine voicemail line. And I'm sorry I can't get to your individual stock picks. Taking a look at the Portfolio Smackdown, you can go to madmanmachine.com and click on the Portfolios tab to see these results. As of the 13th of July, the Index Folio 100 is up 13%. The average of all the portfolio stock pickers trying to pick stocks according to Jim Cramer's recommendations is up 6.5%. However, Cheapo has moved, vaulted into the number one slot out there, up 19.75%. Cheapo placed a big bet on Apple, and wasn't that a winner for you, Cheapo? Congratulations. Mojo Jojo 103 also up 16.34%. Alan Pendleton still beating the Index Folio 100, although the margin is slimming. He's up 15.88%. And Mark up 14.83%. IFA Index Folio in fifth place in the individual competition, but in first place, beating the average of all Cramer followers. Well, I appreciate everyone who wrote a comment in the show notes of Show 69 to enter in the contest to win a copy of the Index Funds 12-Step Program for Active Investors. And as I estimated, there were 20 entries, although one entry said, I've already got a copy of the book. Please don't enter me. I just want to say thanks for the show. So let's go out to random.org and click on generate one random integer between 1 and 20. Format in one column. Press get numbers. And the number we're coming back is 17. And that translates into Top Dog. Top Dog wrote on July 14th, Paul, you helped push me to become an index fund investor. I planned out a multi-year conversion to index funds and did the tax-advantaged accounts first. Now on to individual stocks in taxable accounts. No expenses, but the diversification stinks. Also, the tax bite is extremely painful. That's why I'm spreading the conversion out over several years. Thank you, and stay invested well. Congratulations to you, Top Dog. I think getting a copy of the book, Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors by Mark Hebner, is going to help you stay on the right path. So, Top Dog, if you could email me your mailing address, we'll get the book right out to you. Congratulations to you. And the rest of you, listen up. I'll be giving away another copy of the book on an upcoming show. So stay tuned for details on how to enter the contest. In the meantime, I recommend that you just go out and buy a copy of it anyway. What's 20 bucks when you're investing thousands and thousands of dollars? And this book will help you invest it the right way and make a lot more, right? Just want to read one more of the comments that came out. Hanks1415 says, I've got a potential discussion question for a future show. I'm a relatively recent college grad that just finished taking the GMAT test in preparation for applying to earn an MBA and was pleasantly surprised with a great score. As a Chicago resident, as a student of the Madman Machine, and as the resulting learning of Fama and French's work in the markets, I'm thinking that the University of Chicago would be a great option, assuming I could get in. I'd love to make a career out of helping others effectively manage their money and applying the investing principles I've learned. What would be the best way to go about pursuing a career in investment and money management without selling out to one of the investment banks? Hanks, 1415, you know what? Like I've said a couple times in the past, there is an even better forum for asking that kind of question specifically. If you go to diehards.org/forums, I think it's forums or forum, one or the other, they have talked about this topic a number of times in the past, but they don't mind one bit if you ask that question, specifically your specific question. Again, they would love to help you on the road to being having a career as a financial advisor. And you'll get a number of great answers to your question out there at diehards.org. Thanks, Hanks. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes listening to somebody that's not selling something of their own to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week. And in the meantime, would you go out to IFA.com and take their newly upgraded risk capacity survey? Yes, now it's only 25 questions, and it has helpful charts and graphs as you go along. What's the risk capacity survey do for you? It helps you find out how much risk you should be taking with your investments. And then when you get the answer, it helps guide you to a portfolio that matches that risk. I think it's a critical thing for every investor to know. Some music on this show provided by music.podshow.com. And one thing I've been thinking about since I reported the decline of the REITs this year, I talked about on a previous show how they were down about 2 or 3% for the year till the end of June, first half of the year. Well, that was the DFA REIT index fund. I think the actual REIT index, like the Vanguard REIT index, VNQ, that ETF, that one's down a little bit closer to 6% for the year. So yeah, REITs have been taking a hit for the year. And if you're rebalancing now, that means you're probably going to take a little off the winning sectors and plop it down into REITs.